Ready? Okay, call the meeting to order. All right, let's see, I think there probably will be a question or two. And I'll tell you what, we'll start with Mr. Johnson, if you're ready. Are you ready? You want me to?
Sure, I'm fine.
Okay, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if it's part of the record or not, but I would like to make sure that part of this record would include the plus comments that were submitted on the previous projects, and those are referred to as 2007-12-07, as well as 08, as I think many of the comments in there are germane to this particular project, and I just want to make sure that's part of the record.
Okay. Counselor, is there any issue?
No, that's fine.
I mean, fine? Okay.
Thank you.
Done.
And going forward, some of mine are questions and some of mine are comments, but as I recall from our prior hearing on this, a lot of our concerns were not just with being two projects really being one, but also had a great deal of concern about the wetlands and the impacts of the wetlands, given that this property is right on top of the Nanticoke River, and the wetlands obviously feed into the Nanticoke River. And as part of that, as what was brought up, I guess in the material that was submitted to us by email from the Department of Natural Resources, and their comment in there greatly concerns me that they're saying that what we received from the plus comments was a greatly abbreviated version of their comments. And I have to agree, after taking our 10-minute pause to read these pages, because quite frankly, sir, when I read the plus comments that were submitted with the project before us, I thought they were greatly lacking as well, given the comments that were submitted back on the original project. So I have concerns about how much information was being filtered or condensed by the plus committee that was submitted. That's my editorial.
Okay.
I only have a few more before I'm done. But one of the things that was addressed in there that certainly is something that we all have to be aware of, and I know that's coming out from the Environmental Protection Agency and what was it, a presidential executive order that was put down concerning the watershed implementation plan on all the tributaries leading to the Chesapeake Bay, and certainly the Nanticoke River is one of those. The Delaware is being part of that, largely part of that, a large part of our state is, that we have to reduce the pollutant loads on the local waters and those that drain into the Chesapeake, and that the EPA is in the process of developing a total maximum daily load, or TMDL, for nitrogen, phosphorus, and bacteria. And having said that, one of the concerns that was raised by DENREC, that was raised by this commission in the first public hearing, was the impact of all these individual septic systems on the Nanticoke and the Nanticoke watershed versus the impact of a central sewer system. So I, for one, still have a great deal of concerns about that. I think it's an issue that I'm not sure has been adequately addressed to this point by the exhibit booklet and the presentation in terms of what impact these potentially 99 septic systems will have in terms of contributing nitrogen and phosphorus and perhaps more importantly bacteria into the Nanticoke. As of course, the condition is further compounded by the limited buffers that are being proposed by the applicant, and as part of that, I'm greatly concerned that the buffers are, in many cases, are included in the actual lots, which reduces further the distance from the actual wetlands. In other words, if these lots have a 20-foot rear yard setback, which means they could build right up to that, that means you're going to have 50 feet, period, because they're going to give us the 30 feet on the wetland side and 20 feet on the property side. And given that I think there's been a lot of debate and a lot of study on wetlands, and I think in this case we're not talking about an isolated body of wetlands. We're not talking about isolated wooded wetlands. We're talking about water that's draining to the Nanticoke. The problem isn't just the setback, but the fact that these number of these lots do include the, as they're proposing, part of that 50-foot setback. And as we know, part of the problem that we have with pollution is the fertilizer is placed on people's lots. As they're trying to grow grass or whatever they're trying to grow, whatever it might be, that adds to the nutrient pollution. So I'm concerned that this project not only would not meet the TMDL reduction requirements, it in fact could potentially increase it. And I don't know where we get that information to make that determination of what impact this might have. But I do have to concur with the information that I did receive from DENREC today, where there's the concern about whether or not there's going to be adequate reduction, and what impact that's going to have on the state as a whole, as the state tries to meet its requirements under the pollution control strategy and in that respect. So if someone would like to address the issue of the wetlands and how the buffers that are being proffered are going to help reduce the nutrient load and provide adequate safeguards for the water, I'm open.
Well, I don't know if I can answer your questions, and I certainly, with all due respect, I understand your opinion. And again, I'm not trying to be smart, but we didn't design this to your opinion. We designed it to the law. And I acknowledge that I understand your concern about septic systems, but that really ignores the reality of a lot of the whole problem with this, with the Chesapeake Bay situation and the efforts being made to do it. The vast majority of that problem is agriculture-related, and particularly the poultry industry. I mean, you're zeroing in on these 99 lots and ignoring the reality of what's happening everywhere around this. And that's where the problem's coming from. And they have not been able to get a grip on, or really any kind of strategy on how to deal with a lot of the agricultural things. They're trying to, and that's part of the difficulty of the whole problem. So don't go laying this all on the residential community being the cause of all this, because that just isn't factually correct.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's not just a residential issue.
The other thing, mentioning the 50-foot buffer, again, what you're saying is there should be a 50-foot buffer outside of the lot lines. Okay, but that's not what the law says. The law just says a 50-foot buffer. It doesn't say it has to be out of the lot lines.
Yeah, but on that, though, because I was going to ask that question, if we're talking about the buffer that's mandated by code, not the other one, but it talks about it's supposed to be naturally vegetated or purposely established in vegetation to protect the wetlands, shorelines, and upland environments from man-made encroachments. It shall be maintained in natural vegetation, but may include planted vegetation where necessary to protect, stabilize, and enhance the area. I guess that's a practical question more than a legal one. If it's within a lot line, how does the county or how does anybody ensure that that's complied with? Because, you know, if it's within a lot, then it just naturally is going to turn into somebody's backyard lawn and that
Well, I mean,
thing.
It's done through restrictions. It's done the same way that nobody's going to be able to drive an all-terrain vehicle in this. It's going to be a private restriction that is enforced by the community. I mean, it's designated, it's marked, and then it's enforcement question. But again, my point is this. If you don't want it, then change the law. Say the 50-foot buffer has to be outside the lot lines, but don't. You know, we're complying with what the requirement is, and we've done this before. I've done this many times. If it's not required to be outside the lot lines, we're obviously trying to design something to make things properly fit. You know, we're complying. Remember, now, we're complying with one-acre lots within that conservation area. That's an enormous lot, right? So there's a 1 acre for each house in there. So there's plenty of room to absorb these uses on a one-acre lot. And again, going back to the wetland buffers, and I certainly understand where you come from and your opinion about it, but again, as you know, we have a 50-foot buffer from state wetlands. We have no required buffer from federal wetlands. There isn't any. And, you know, you and I have had this discussion, or heard in my rants before. It doesn't exist. So we're giving a 25-foot buffer. And what I'm hearing is, well, you know, that's not good enough. And it's like, well, wait a minute. I'm giving something that isn't even required. And you know, if you want a buffer, then pass an ordinance that says, hey, you got to have a 50-foot buffer, 25-foot buffer, a 600-foot buffer, because then I won't walk in here with, you know, without a buffer. I'll tell my client I got to have a 600-foot buffer. That's what the county said. Sorry, that's what the deal is. But until that's the law, it's not the law. So, you know, I understand your concerns, but again, you understand our concerns, that we're trying to design a project that complies with the law and creates the lots in compliance with the law. So,
could you have someone put up the wetland buffers that you were showing before?
Can we see that also, please?
Would it be fair to say that I see the pink line that says that's the 404 buffer? Is that correct? The pink line
is up in here and in here.
Right, but the pink. Well,
what's the pink?
The pink area. What is? I can't read.
Well, what's the designation? That's the 25-foot non-tidal wetland buffer.
Okay.
It's a 404.
So would it be fair to say then, Mr. Fuqua, that most of the 50-foot buffer that's required from the state wetlands, in fact, goes beyond that 25-foot piece that's being proffered for the 404 wetlands? Because I do appreciate the 25-foot from the 404, but it appears as though the 50-foot buffer that's required from the state wetlands actually goes, in most cases, beyond that of the pink anyhow.
And that is correct by 20 feet in some cases. In some cases, it crosses back over. Keep in mind, there's no buffer requirements currently from non-tidal.
I understand that.
So we're taking and placing our lot lines completely out of that 25-foot zone. So we've actually, from the law, we've moved the lot lines in 25 feet from where they could be.
Right. Well, here's, and I agree that, you know, about the 50-foot buffer, that's part of the ordinance, it's what we all follow, and certainly I am in a current, concur with the ordinance as are written, that I will follow those. But here's my concern. As I stated, in terms of this being right on the water, the fact that the wetlands, in fact, do drain into the Nanticoke, and it's further, this is a unique situation, Mr. Fuqua. I think given the nature of this property, its location, I think there's a lot of factors that take this beyond the letter of the law. The letter of law, yes, says 50 feet. And two of my concerns is some of the designations that this area has. And one of them is, and this was back in 2007, so it's recent, that this is considered the nutrient management critical area priority. And that's just all this red area, which certainly includes the Nanticoke River. The second area of concern that I have is because these have been designated exceptional recreational or ecological significance. So the watershed, which includes these waters, is certainly is this pink area again, and I think it's of grave importance to not only the Chesapeake Bay, but more importantly to the local citizens, because that's a major fishing area, it's a major recreational area, and it's being developed as a county now as part of ecological tours. So there's a lot of factors that come into play. And I also agree there's already been a lot of damage that's been done to this system. My concern is about why are we going to add to it? And if there's things that can be done reasonably to help reduce some of that impact of future development, whether it's residential or agricultural or industrial, then why aren't we doing it? And sticking with in this situation, a strict letter of the law reading about the 50-foot buffer, to me, undermines those areas of something that is a critical area from the standpoint of the ecological impact that it can have on that.
Well, I would like to address a couple of the items. One item you mentioned was bacteria. It's been documented that bacteria does not move laterally in soils. Otherwise, you would not be able to have a well within 100 foot of a septic system to be able to drink the water. So the bacteria is, in our opinion, not an issue. If the septic systems failed, yes, you could have bacteria on surface, but these areas are, you have large areas of land where the systems can be upgraded for many, many years. The other item you mentioned is the wetlands and concern about the wetlands and the nutrients. Actually, the wetlands will benefit from the nutrients in this area. The plants will grow. They need nutrients to survive, and they the nitrogen and phosphorus that is not absorbed by the trees, which is a natural buffer from and part of that wetlands, other vegetation will grow. One other aspect is regarding the TMDL issue, and as Mr. Fuqua pointed out, majority of the concern there is the agricultural and poultry industry. And it's been presented before this board numerous times where residential developments, when they're put in an agricultural, prior agricultural environment, actually significantly reduce the nutrient loadings on the ditches and waterways. In fact, cut it by probably 50%. So residential development is not the main or a significant contributor to the TMDL issue, particularly when we have nutrient removal devices on the site, the grass swales, the infiltration systems, the plantings, that are all recognized reducers of TMDL loadings, which are the nitrogen and phosphorus. So it's not that they've been ignored. They've been taken into consideration, and there will be significant nutrient reduction before water actually even gets to the estuary. So I just wanted to add that and clarify the record.
And I need to respond. I need to say something at this point. The commission, and I know Mr. Johnson's feeling on this, but the county is charged with adhering to the letter of the law. I mean, if you stray from the letter of the law, you know, that's going to subject any decision that's made by the county to judicial review and likely being overturned. I mean, that's what the Ashburn case, East Lake Partners case, all those cases say. It needs to be the letter of the law so that property owners or folks who are in opposition to an application know what the law is, what the rules are that apply to any subdivision. The county, whether it's county council on a change in zone or conditional use or the Planning and Zoning Commission on a recommendation or subdivision, can't decide these on an ad hoc basis. It has to be based on what's in the ordinance or what's in state law or what's in federal law. You know, I agree, and you know, I guess in principle with what Mr. Johnson's saying, but at the same time, I also know what the law says. So.
And I acknowledge the same thing. I understand you're looking for a good goal. You're looking to make it better. But again, if the letter of the law is not the standard, then what is the standard? And see, that's the problem. It can't just become subjective. You can't do that, because that's tyranny and that's insanity. It's got to be the law. So if you want to get where you want to get, you change the law to incorporate those items. The other thing is the two maps you held up, which I'm not familiar with, but it had two designations for this piece of land. I mean, I just saw those. I don't know what those maps are, but isn't 95% of Sussex County in the same designations according to that map?
It is, because that's because such a large part of
the state of Delaware
is part of the Chesapeake Bay.
Exactly. So the whole county, so everything you just said now would apply to any development anywhere in the county.
It's not, or is?
No.
According to those maps.
A large part of it, yes.
My comment's really not beyond the scope of what we're doing here as far as the Chesapeake Bay is concerned, but I think recently, I believe somebody reported that we are responsible for maybe 5% of what's going on there. The whole state of Delaware
2%
is responsible for 2% of what's happening with the Chesapeake Bay. So, yeah, you know.
Well,
who knows?
My concern is more in terms of the impact locally, in terms
on the
in
river,
terms of Nanticoke
sure.
River yeah. and the Nanticoke watershed. But it's as part of it to put it into perspective, I guess, where the 50-foot buffer, especially more so including the buffers part of the lots, the area that becomes of concern to me is under section 99-9C, where you talk about the minimal use of wetlands and floodplains. In this case, what they're proposing is using part of the wetlands or the floodplains as part of the lots in some cases, because if there's a 50-foot buffer from that and we just put 40% of it in a person's lot, which then is subject to what kind of control? Obviously, if there's a 50-foot buffer and it's designated as not part of the person's lot line, then in that situation, they're not going to be able to get a building permit to put an accessory building on it. They're going to know that that's not their property. They're going to know that that's not something that they fertilize and put grass seed or whatever on it. So my concern is not so much the whether there should be a 50-foot buffer or a 100-foot buffer or a 300-foot buffer, whatever Denrick might say. My concern is, in this particular case, is that the buffer is being included in many of the lot lines. And that's my concern.
Just a quick response to that. The buffer requirement in the code is a setback.
It's a setback.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It's nothing to do with where the lot line is. It's only a setback for improvement to the wetlands.
Yeah, but it goes a little bit beyond that.
It's beyond that.
I'm just saying the basics of it.
Yeah. But it doesn't say that it has to be within or without a lot line. I agree.
They're outside of the building envelope of any platted lot. So when they come in for a building permit, it'd be obvious that they can't build in that area.
Right.
I could add something here too. We're only talking about 8 or 9 lots that are affected by the buffer being on the lot itself from the wetlands, and in each case, it's minimal. As I said before, in each case, it's not buildable. And if you recall, the other requirement that we're talking about on the 1-acre lots, 30 to 40% is going to be retained in woodland. Where do you think the property owner is going to want that 40% woodland to be? Contiguous to the wetland. Contiguous to the wooded area that's already adjacent to his property. That's probably where he's going to want that. So in a sense, you're going to have a good wooded buffer that's even greater than 50%.
But that, just I want to make sure I'm clear on what you just said on the numbers, though. That also includes all the lots that run along the river, right?
Well, I was saying 8 or 9 that are adjacent to the wetlands.
Okay. Right? Because the buffer also that we're talking about, within,
correct,
whether it's within a lot or not, also runs along the river on those lots, too.
I wasn't speaking to that.
Okay.
All right, well, let me move away from wetlands, Mr. Chairman. I've expanded on it too much.
That's fine, although I will point out to you that you asked one question in the last 20 minutes.
I understand that. So I will ask a question about the residual lands.
You've got the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You've got the floor. You keep on.
Could you show me again where the residual lands?
It's basically this land up in here on the other side of the wetlands.
And is that land that can't be built on?
It's possible to build one residence on the residual land.
And how would they access the residual land?
There's a road in there now that actually, is there a pipe?
Culvert there now.
There's a culvert there. It went out to that point out there. I think there was an old marina out there.
On this side of the wetland, the road's on the other side.
But there's nothing currently on that, residual lands?
No.
But there's a possibility to build one lot on there.
Well, again, it's a separate parcel, so right. You'd have the right to do that. There's no intention to do anything with it. As I said, when we went back to the original plus comments and the original TAC comments, it was requested that be left out of this, and that's really why it was removed. The original plan we had actually had a recreational area down at that point, and we just dropped that.
So other than the lots that border on the river, because obviously some of those are within, the lot lines are within that 50-foot buffer too, but the ones that are, I guess that's the southern portion of the property line, yeah, those, is the buffer included in those lot lines because you wouldn't be able to create the lots otherwise? Is it a design issue?
It is a design issue to get the full 1 acre lot size that's required in the conservation area and the 3/4 acre beyond it for a few of the lots. It's needed for the lot area requirement.
So it wouldn't be possible to move those lots, those buffers out of those lots without reducing your number of lots?
Would it be possible to reduce the 1 acre requirement?
That's ordinance. I just like the 50-foot buffer.
We're
I can't change that
ordinance
either.
To ordinance too.
Mr. Johnson, I'd have to add I have some historical memory because I was around for a lot of these things. Back in the 80s, Mr. Cole came up with the requirement for lots that are within the conservation zone. Had to be the 1 acre and 150-foot width. The whole reason of that was to, in effect, create buffers, in effect, create open space for groundwater recharge and everything else. So, that came at it from one direction. And then, from a different direction came the conservation thing with the buffers and everything. So here, to a certain degree, you have those two concepts overlapping and working to accomplish the same result. So you have 1 acre, particularly along the water there, you have 1 acre lots, and then with this 50-foot buffer. It's not a 50-foot setback. So the purpose of it is the same, whether it's on the lot or off the lot. It accomplishes what it was intended to accomplish, that it's open space that's going to be used basically for groundwater. Now, the restrictions can control that. This is the way it's been done on other projects because I've done it on other projects. And, again, I just don't like any of my client getting singled out and treated differently than other people, because that's not the way the law is supposed to work. So I understand if we want to change it, you change it, but this complies with the ordinance, and it complies with what we've done on other applications.
Well, like I said, I guess my issue is not because I can't, the ordinance is not something that this commission is able to address, and then certainly I intend to comply with the ordinances as they are. But I guess it's more of an issue of design, of a superior design. It's more of an issue of greater guarantees for protection of some of our vital natural resources that I take issue to the buffers being included in some of those lots. I'm not saying you should have a 100-foot buffer or whatever Denrec is saying. whether it's supported by scientific or data or not, I'm saying that that's my concern.
Well, here's what I'm saying.
And I'm done.
I'm going to exercise my right to limit testimony on that subject, and I'm going to ask you to move on.
I'm done, sir.
Go to your next one. Are you done?
I'm done.
Oh, was that it? Oh, well, that was your summary comment? Okay.
Yeah, that's my summary comment.
Summary comment? Okay. Well, then we'll go on to Mr. Burton.
I'm not going to dwell on Mr. Johnson.
Thank you.
Well, I do have one question.
You have the right to do that because you have the floor, whatever you want.
The John Smith's Chesapeake Natural Historic Trail and a request of a 100-foot setback along the river's edge, was that given any consideration?
No.
The 100-foot along, well, again, there's the 50-foot buffer's there.
Okay.
All right. Let me answer it this way, okay, because your question's there, 100-foot buffer along the shore, right? But in those same comments, they also were requesting a 300-foot buffer from the Nanticoke Wildlife Area to preserve some or all of the forest woods on the property to avoid, and Jerry mentioned this, the ancient Sand Ridge Forest, if it exists, and to have a buffer from it, to have a 100-foot buffer from all wetlands, and to have a 300-foot buffer from the Atlantic White Cedar wetlands if they could be identified. So when you start overlapping all these requests on top of one another, you see what we end up with.
Yeah. And a lot of those are mystery things, I understand, but the John Smith's Trail is something they're trying to get done, and it's moving forward.
And I'll tell you what, a 50-foot buffer easily provides the necessary area for a trail. I mean, I don't see what 100-foot accomplishes as opposed to 50
feet. But that would be inside the lot line, correct?
Well, dude, I don't know. Is that inside? We could put an easement on there if
we wanted to travel on the yard.
We have a roadway network established, but in order to get some type of a trail across into the hunting preserve, you would have to, you know, traverse major wetlands in order to do that. And, you know, I don't know if that's practical.
I don't know. Either. I just know that it was, I know part of this trail.
Yeah, the other thing, Mr. Burton, from everything I read, you kind of caught me off guard there, because everything I read, I thought the John Smith Trail was a water trail.
I think it is all of both. I think it's a water trail and a scenic land trail, so that from the water, I guess you're seeing a scenic view. That's what I'm reading. Would there be a problem limiting the amount of docks that would be located along those 10 lots?
Yeah, I think where we were coming from, these are one-acre lots. I don't know how many lots are along there, maybe 10.
The two existing docks.
Obviously, yeah. It's inherent in the value of it to have access to the river. The river is not... people don't avoid recreational uses on the Nanticoke River. Boats are very common. As you know, there's the marina and Blades, and a lot of people have docks, and we thought docks were appropriate for a waterfront lot, to answer your question, really.
Well, we were going to leave that to the individual to make application if they desired to have a dock, and they would deal directly with Denrick.
Would there be proper marking on the setbacks and the buffer zones all throughout your pink and dark green area? Are you planning on marking them?
We would be able to mark the buffer lines if that was appropriate with some sort of monumentation.
And we have no problem with it. I submitted a condition. I didn't go into details about it, but that could certainly be a condition, that these would be marked, designated, and maintained. The marks would be maintained and would be stated on, you know, somewhere, a sign saying, you know, no entry, as you see on a golf course and things like that.
No fencing.
No fencing. And lastly, would the cemetery that's there, you're planning on preserving that and upkeeping that?
Yeah, it's the family cemetery, as I said, and certainly Mr. Conaway's intention to do that. And we'd work that into the restrictions in terms of it being maintained and just kept neat. And, it's a neat feature, to be honest with you.
Okay. No further questions.
All right, sir. Smith. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Burton and Mr. Johnson, for raising some concerns and excellent questions. Just following up, trails and amenities, at what point would they be put in, tied with the number of building permits, if you were successful?
Again, it would be built in phases, probably three phases. Realistically, I mean, you're familiar with this area of the county. We don't anticipate a quick absorption rate. I mean, this is probably a 10-year project. It's going to be, compared to the beach area, is not something.
Current rates, it might be a 100-year project.
Like everything else, So I think they would be put in as the faces were done.
The amenities would go in as.
Yeah. And the amenities are just trails and basically small park areas with some, playground equipment and picnic benches and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, what type homes do you envision for the project?
There will be architectural controls. Mm-hmm. There will be an architectural review committee. None of this has been drawn up yet, but you're familiar with it from other subdivisions and things of that nature. It certainly would be geared toward what I would call a very nice community. I can't tell you house sizes, but I think we discussed probably minimum of 2,500 square feet, but we're not into details about that yet.
It may vary dependent on where you are in the conservation zone. They may be larger than they are back, but the owners are looking to have custom built homes as opposed to track built homes.
So you're calling it upscale as opposed to entry level or moderately priced? Or?
I would just call it very nice homes. I mean, it's certainly not going to be anything that's less than it exists in the area.
It'll move from moderate to expensive.
Thank you. On the septic, what I read, it appears to me, tell me if I'm right or wrong, that the majority of your systems, as indicated by your scientists, are rated for LPP or sand mounds.
There will be no requirement for sand mounds. The LPP will suffice even in the poorer areas and conventional systems in a large portion of the area. So there is no need for a mounding on the property.
Okay. So how about standard? Would some of them be standard? Do you know? Because these
some
percentages.
Some of them can be standard. It depends on the soil type as they're mapped, and there's a color diagram as part of the feasibility study in section 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got it.
The yellow areas, I believe, are the ones that would be the LPP systems, and the red would be conventional, and I believe the green as well, or some of it could be LPP.
I bring that up because I'm of the belief that, particularly if this project's taken some period of time and these more stringent recommendations and regulations and things go in that Mr. Johnson and Mr. Burton alluded to, these septics will probably have to have this advanced treatment system on, which may therefore take up more lot area and may cut back on your trees.
Well, I think the advanced system would require aeration and nitrogen removal as part of the tankage and should not affect the distribution or disposal field at all. If those regulations come about, the lots that aren't developed at the time would most likely fall under the new regulations if they are passed for this area.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Mr. Link.
No questions.
Mr. Abbott.
No questions.
Counsel.
No questions, thanks.
All right, gentlemen, if you would take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here with an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2010-4, Jesse Frederick Conaway and Everett T. Conaway? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2010-4?
Richard, you give us your name, you may have the floor.
My name is Bayard Layton, and I, my property joins up to Mr. Conaway's.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, this might help me if I, can I pass
sure.
this out
yes, through? Sir, go ahead.
What I've got here, as you see these two chicken houses on your papers you have, I've got them marked with an X. They're within 80 feet of the property line of Mr. Conaway's. There hasn't been nothing mentioned about my parcel, the South Woodland development. I did that, plus then I sold it. Leighton's Riviera used to be mine. I sold that. I bought it from my father, but anyhow. My concern here is you've got, at the end where I've got those X's, there is 28 52-inch fans, tunnel fans, with two 30-inch fans on the end of the house. Mm-hmm. Now, you've got I heard a 25-foot buffer zone mentioned, but now it's showing a 40 on this paper I've got. DPI in the Good Neighbor pad in, which is what they consider the fans, the cooling part, recommends a 250-foot buffer zone. That's a Good Neighbor. That's not in law.
Right.
Now, I talked to another gentleman that's with Farm Credit, and he deals with the EPA and everything, with the laws in Maryland and Delaware, as Mr. Johnson was talking about, with your nitrogen and so on and so forth. They recommend a 500-foot buffer zone from the fan. I'm not talking about property line setback where you build your house from, because of the velocity of all these fans. Like last summer, they ran constant, and you're going to have an odor. And I want it documented or whatever, put in these minutes, that if subdivision is approved, I don't want to hear nobody coming to me and saying it stinks. We're in Sussex County.
You're protected by the state right to farm legislation, so you won't have any issues at all. Crank them up, let them run.
Well, I feel sorry for the ones that are right there in front of me, because
that is not your problem. You're raising poultry, you've got to do what you got to do.
There's room for a third house there, and that's why I'm showing you.
How come you haven't started it yet? Come on.
We might.
it's your right to do that.
Okay.
Nobody's going to interfere with that.
So right. The EPA comes in, so now, the pollution.
Well, that's a different subject, but so, you
now,
know.
Now, the EPA on these farms are checked by the EPA. It's got its own drainage.
This regulation is well known among all the people that come here, so there is really no cause for sympathy in that instance. And they know that. They know that.
I mean, it should.
So it's not your issue.
They can be put in their covenants.
That's actually just all I put in. That was one of the proposed conditions that it would be included in, because there's actual specific language that's in the county code, that's in state law, that has to be in restrictive covenants that's adjacent to farmland like this. So even if they hadn't proposed it, if this got approved, we'd require it. So it's specific on odors, noise, lights, nuisances, everything. They, you know, an adjacent property owner can't complain about it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right.
I wouldn't run them when it was 30 degrees just to be ornery, but you listen, if they come on, they come on, you know. That's
okay,
the way it is.
They gotta live.
That's the way it is.
They gotta live.
Well, that's right.
Okay. The only other concern I had,
like, money to me. I don't know about you, but that odor you're
talking
about.
That's what I call it.
Smells,
when somebody moves down here, because I'm also a builder and contractor myself, and you know, I say, hey, you're in Sussex County, get used to it or go back. That's my comment, and you know, but the only other thing is there's plenty of subdivisions out there. I feel we ought to fill up some of the others first before we go proving it more, And Mr. Conway has all the right to do with what he wants to do with his property. I know that. But as I said, I'm also a contractor and a builder. And we're flooded, and there's no work, like somebody made a comment up there, you know. So. And the only other thing is, in back of these chicken houses, concert with the bald eagle, there is two or three bald eagles. It's nothing for us to come out and come down there to see them sitting in those trees. So I would like for that to be taken into consideration, because you're going to be taking out a lot of trees. And on the septic systems, the gentleman knows what he's talking about. I've just finished. We have a course every year we go to. But also remember one thing. Around your drain fields, you have to cut out. There has to be a barrier of 10 feet with no trees due to the root it's growing into. Mm-hmm. That's basically all I have to say.
All right, sir. We thank you. All right, who's next?
Good evening, everyone.
Hey.
Thank you for the opportunity to present.
Start with your name.
Roy Whitaker. I live at 28986 Cannon Drive, adjacent to the Conway Farm.
Thank you.
The first item I'd like to go over this evening would be the groundwater drainage. Would it be possible I can see the other chart, please? Thank you. With all due respect to our professional designers, and in conjunction with what I mentioned at the July 9th hearing in 2009, apparently none of my comments were actually listened to, discussed, reviewed on an engineering level, and I believe that I can provide a clear and legal case as to why this major subdivision should be declined. Again, the developer's efforts, designs, research, and submissions for the major subdivision do not appear to be based on facts, best management practices, or proper engineering. When I was here,
Wait a second. So I have to ask, are you an engineer?
Are you? Yeah.
Yes, I am.
A license of the state of Delaware?
No, sir.
Okay. What type of engineer are you, sir? Civil engineer?
Mechanical
engineer. Yes. Okay.
I would just caution you about making statements that they're not following Delaware engineering practices. That's all. I think that's a statement that unless you're licensed in the state of Delaware as a civil engineer, that's problematic. So.
Thank you. The wetlands drawing, if we refer to it, on the left side there, we see a basically the shape of maybe someone's intestine. About 6 inches in from the left side in the green, we see a narrow restriction. If anyone hasn't questioned that restriction, can everyone see that? Where it's seriously next down? What the owner of the property, the developer of the property, has done is fill in some wetlands there. Actually created an earthen dam with earth and stones and created, as it was described tonight, as a culvert. When I presented the council in 2009, I reviewed the fact that the ditch that services this area goes all the way from these wetlands connecting to the Nanticoke through Mr. Conway's property, through the O'Neill farm, through my property, back through the O'Neill farm, and connects up with Woodland Ferry Road, the other side of the Nanticoke Wildlife Area. Again, actually goes underneath Woodland Ferry Road. That entire area is approximately 2,010 acres of drainage that has to go through here. That area that they've done has been described as a culvert, and it has to actually drain a considerable area. And let me grab some pictures I have. The first three pictures, and I have the large ones, also have color ones in my pocket, just the small ones, actually shows the earthen dam. The second photo is a close-up of the earthen dam culvert area, nominally 6 inches by about 6 or 7 feet. Third picture shows a sunken area in the middle of the earthen filled culvert area. And the third picture is an area of the, or fourth one, is stepping back a little bit, showing the general impoundment.
Thank you.
So So as I explained to the committee and the attendees that evening, including our professional engineer, none of that was included, apparently, in the review process.
None of what was included? I'm not trying to understand.
The drainage issue. As I explained to council last year, and I also have pictures, my property, when it floods, the wave of water, the pond, the lake, whatever, is approximately 200 feet wide.
You have that problem today, now? I mean, you have it currently?
No, sir, but we've had it several times over the past 20 years.
Right, but it's a condition that exists today.
Yes, and I believe it's actually been exacerbated by the building of this dam. And again, this dam and impoundment apparently has been built for the sole purpose of providing access to the whatever name they use for the other parcel.
The point or whatever. Central.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? You keep referencing it's been built. How long ago was it built?
I don't know for certain. However, my last walk down there was on New Year's Day, year 2000. It did not exist at that time. I know Mr. Conaway, because we used to ride horses back there, used to have a somewhat of a makeshift crossing there, but it was not this huge earthen dam, and it did not have what they're calling this culvert. In conjunction with that, the Soil Conservation Service worked with the O'Neill family. They actually built a complete ditch deepening project around this. They cleaned out the wetlands of fallen logs and timbers so the drainage would work. And Martin O'Neill couldn't be here this evening. He did confirm that that dam, earthen stone dam, was not there when him and his brother were down there last.
Can I ask a question? Can we relate this to the subdivision application? I mean, we've heard a lot of history about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just how that applies to the application that's in front of us.
Specifically, multiple aspects. One, by backing up this entire property starting at this point, going all the way back to Woodland Ferry Road, we've now created a drainage situation with houses along Woodland Ferry Road, Patty Cannon Estates, my property, and the O'Neill Farm, and also the Conaway property. Some of the houses that they've shown that were in the 100-year floodplain that they would like to redelineate, they will have houses, yards, septics underwater during periods of heavy rainfall or moderate rainfall during a wet winter, where we get continuous rainfall. In conjunction with that, it's proven that if you leave forest land, which mine is a certified sustainable tree forest, and the Conaway property, again, is trees next to me, the O'Neill farm has a small wooded area you've seen on your charts probably, right next to me also, that a study was done by Teske and Hinckley that forest death will occur by properties that do remain flooded. So again, we've created an impoundment situation that's going to destroy property. I've had up to like 5 acres underwater at a time, can't use my property, and will actually kill the forest land there. That situation is currently just described was referred to DNRIC Subaqueous Division last week. They are reviewing it to see what went on, how it got filled, why it got filled, and hopefully the end result of that will be the removal. In conjunction with that, too, there were some wetlands directly adjacent to the ditch, which I have pictures of here, that have been filled with some sort of debris. It's a pond area, and a considerable amount of brush, nominally 100 by 200 feet, has been put in the wetlands. Application to our situation here again is filling of wetlands. We'd be maybe modifying the drainage and screwing up the groundwater discharge. I'll submit those, please. The PLUS application also on line item 31 did state that they did not impact any tax ditch, public ditch, or private ditch. On the topic of groundwater recharge, as everyone knows, this is in an excellent groundwater discharge area. The DNRIC review of the site noted that installing stormwater management ponds in excellent groundwater recharge areas has the potential to contaminate the groundwater beneath it and infiltrate into the aquifer. Since the developer was well aware of the sensitivity of this area, They should have submitted plans using best practices. What we have seen here this evening are plans, I believe, that are showing less than optimum practices and have also put the public drinking water aquifer at risk because of that. We should see environmentally sensitive plans for such an environmentally sensitive project. On the Chesapeake Drainage TMDLs, several points I think need to be brought up. The original option was to build this project at 131 some homes. We would probably have had less pollution if they had stayed with the higher home count and put in a central system. We've dropped, I believe, one below the magic number of 100 to try to get around that. Just like I got a driver's license this afternoon, we had to take lots of different paperwork with us that was never required to comply with federal laws. We have the federal TMDLs coming up. Everybody's trying to figure out how to comply with them. Putting in 99 individual septics will not do it. As noted, too, being a 10-year project, they don't expect to complete this for 10 or more years. And at that rate, we will be into the new TMDL regulations. And the systems that have been approved may not meet the current code. On the buffer zones, multiple things were mentioned tonight. On just the chicken house buffer, on the AR1 code, if I'm not mistaken, it requires a 200-foot setback now on the line. My neighbor, Mr. Layton's chicken houses don't have quite that setback, but we're still not requiring it on the other side. And in conjunction with my understanding of Sussex code, on Chapter 99, I believe our buffers are noted as a minimum, not as a maximum or the optimum. It's noted as a minimum. And if that is the case, we need to reconsider the buffers that we have in conjunction with 99.9C with the different agricultural uses. Does it conform to existing uses, et cetera? The bald eagles were mentioned in brief this evening. As were the DeMarva tree squirrels. In regard to buffer zones, we did shoot down a cell tower just a few years ago that was supposed to be put on Mr. Layton's property. The reason for shooting that down was because of the endangered species, local species, and historical value of the area. In conjunction with that, the bald eagles that are documented and known to be in the area, and even by the developer had been noted to be in the area. That was on public record, by the way. The status quo, best scientific knowledge at this point, requires a 600-foot buffer line to any bald eagle areas. So we should, as our attorney mentioned this evening, maybe we should be considering a 600-foot buffer in some of these cases. Again, it's not as a minimum to national wildlife areas or Nanticoke wildlife area, but when you have an area that has endangered species on it, we should consider extra buffers. That would cover the existing land use, also their request for the 300-foot buffer. The area out there, too, the same buffer, the Nanticoke wildlife area, is fragmented, as mentioned. It's 4,400 acres total. Just to the north of this complex, up to Woodland Ferry Road and River Road, is a block of approximately 500 acres. The block next to Mr. Conaway, directly adjacent to him, is closer to 900 acres. There's basically a wildlife throughway that goes down through the O'Neill Farm, wooded property, that won't be developed, also wetland area, through my property and into the Conaway property. A buffer should be maintained on that property to maintain that wildlife throughway. Again, looking at the long-term health of the ecology of the environment. The as Mr. Burton mentioned this evening, the DNRIC report also did mention the visual buffers that should be required from the river, again, with a 100-foot setback. The DNRIC report also mentioned that less than a 100-foot buffer was insufficient in regard to the pollution levels coming off the lots. They need to be increased from the 50 to 100 foot. In regard to the Delmarva tree squirrel, which was mentioned tonight, their willingness to do a survey, it's been said previously up here and again tonight, they're willing to do it or at some point, it was also in the PLUS review comments, they mentioned in the PLUS review the financial hardship of doing a tree squirrel survey. Well, I know the professional engineer costs are considerable for a project like this, and this is just one part of the package to do it right. There should have been an endangered species study done on this land before anything was done, before the submission was made. This is a special property in very unique circumstances. The owner has known about it for years. The owner has even publicly acclaimed that for years, that it's special property. So it needs to be treated as such. And again, there was no financial hardship documentation that I saw anywhere in the developer's response to the PLUS review. The on the TFS study, I'm a little concerned that it was only done in October. I don't know what DLDOT's requirements are for that. I would think that might have to be done several times, and as the council mentioned, there is a chance that the ferry may or may not have been running. I don't know if that was noted in that also.
Mr. Whitaker, it's a six-car ferry.
In summertime, though, the traffic gets very high.
I appreciate it. I used to live there. I know what it is. I used to cross that ferry. Granted, it may increase by 6 to 12 cars. I grant you that.
The big difference, though, ironically, with the Woodland Ferry, if you're out trying to bicycle on Woodland Ferry Road, you'll get six cars trying to do 80 miles an hour to make up the time they lost on the ferry to get to Laurel at one click. They're not spread out over an hour, unfortunately.
Well, I wasn't on a bicycle.
Yeah.
Okay, you got me there. Anyway, point taken. The ferry might have an impact.
And the very last item on there, the PLUS review. I did some checking last week. I was very concerned that the 2007 comments were not up to speed with the current 2010 comments. I made some calls. I spoke to the State Planning Commission. And I talked to Connie up there. Then she recommended I talk to Leanne Walling. And I found out that the 15-page DINRIC report was not made part of the public minutes. I'm very concerned that that package wasn't complete. In conjunction with that, I'd like to ask Council, did anyone from Council get any feedback from the Department of Education?
That would be
no.
Okay.
Notice is sent out to the school districts. Typically
they don't respond.
The comment, and sometimes in a PLUS comment, I don't remember if it was in or not. The Department of Education responds.
Yeah,
but it's usually a very just generic comment.
I did actually, since I work in that field, I did speak with Dr. John Marinucci from the Department of Education. PLUS comments were submitted to the PLUS committee, and those were also not included. I then proceeded to check the DLDOT comments. DLDOT was kind enough to forward a set of those, and I also checked with Department of Ag and a few other agencies. I do know that the PLUS comments on this project were incomplete. Multiple agencies' input was not included, and the ones that were not all complete.
I just want to make sure I understand something. You're saying they weren't included. Do you know that they existed? Because here's the issue. These folks get asked, and sometimes they don't respond. That doesn't mean they weren't included. It means that they didn't respond. And that's the, I'm a little concerned about the way that you're expressing this, and just in fairness to all of us, that we don't have comments from the school district because they didn't give us any, okay? We don't have comments from I'm willing to bet you that we don't have comments from all those folks because there weren't any. There wasn't.
I would be glad to show the council right now. I will get my notes. I have emails from Department of Education. You have the email tag that preceded it, plus the comments that went out on it. On Department of Ed in particular, there was two projects that were reviewed as feedback.
No, this project right here?
Yes.
They made comments on it. They submitted them to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and we don't have them.
No, I think what's been stated is that they didn't end up in the PLUS report, but I think that's been a policy determination that the
that's
Office of Management and Budget's made to come up with PLUS comments.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said there were things were submitted to the commission that weren't, weren't part of the record.
Well, the PLUS comments are a lot of cases are summarized. They're not the total document because they could get 40 pages of something and its summary would place it in a report, so it's summarized. We don't get copies of everything, but we get summaries, typically.
But in conjunction with that, I believe the members have read the 15 pages of DNRIC reports that were not included, and they were substantial in quantity and content. And in conjunction with the consideration of the multiple aspects of 99.9C, we are not in compliance with county code. We are not in compliance with state law. Thank you for your time. I do have one set of comments from my neighbor. I'd like to submit. She had to go teach class at Del Tech.
They'll be made part of the record.
Sure, so we'll put them in the record. Yeah,
Mr. Lank.
Hand them up to Mr. Lank.
Thank you.
We'll get them in the record.
Thank you.
That reference is about almost 2 pages, and it was provided by Mark Platic. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. You don't know either. That is a part of the record.
Okay, who's next?
Make sure it's referenced in the
Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Okay, anybody on the commission have any questions? Before I close the public hearing, I want to thank all of you for being patient. You've been sitting here almost 4 hours, okay? And you had to wait all the way to the end. Being considerate and being professional in your presentation, I can assure you that everything that gets said gets considered. It really does because it's important. And I appreciate the fact that you took the time to come out and be here. So we're going to close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us if you like to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning.
Can I expand upon that just a little bit?
You may.
Because it's just come up in this public hearing. Our record is a set of minutes, and the minutes are summarized, okay, based on what we hear and Shane and I put together and what we get in our notes. We do keep a transcript online, actually, locked where it's videotaped, and so that part stays forever. So it's always a record.
All right, gentlemen, that completes our public hearings. Our next item on our agenda.